Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkish, and along with Eric Edholm and Arthur Arkish, it is our great pleasure to bring you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly on the radio, where every week we try and bring you all the news, notes, and rumors from around the NFL, both on and off the football field.
We'll talk about the Aaron Hernandez situation in New England and pick some of our favorite defensive free agents for the 2013 season.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for joining us again this week for Pro Football Weekly on the radio. I am Hub Arkish, and I am joined in studio by Senior Editor Eric Edholm and Associate Editor Arthur Arkish. And guys, we're going to have to start out this week in New England talking about the New England Patriots and specifically their tight ends. Now, normally when you talk Patriots tight ends, all the conversation starts with Rob Gronkowski, the best tight end in the National Football League. We'll talk a little more about Gronk in just a moment, but the guy who's really been in the news this past week has been their number two tight end, who would be a starter with any other team, Aaron Hernandez. Hernandez involved in separate incidences involving shootings, apparently over the last 3 or 4 months, both came to light this week. Now, there is a murder in the neighborhood in which he lives. The victim is 27-year-old Odin L. Lloyd. As of this taping, it was not clear whether Hernandez was involved in this or not, but he was being investigated. Again, as we talk right now, he had not been charged, but Lloyd is an acquaintance of his. In fact, he appears to have been dating the sister of Hernandez's fiance or girlfriend, and his house was being searched. Tremendous concern around the Patriots organization. And then what comes to light is there was a shooting in February. Apparently, it might have been an accidental shooting, but he was in a car with another friend who was shot in the arm. The bullet traveled to his head, and he lost his right eye. He has filed a civil suit against Aaron Hernandez. So, Eric, again, as we talk right now, we're not sure how this is going to work out, but it pretty clearly is serious.
Yeah, you can obviously say that we don't know the outcome, but this is pretty serious business, and we're at the point now where we can start asking ourselves whether Aaron Hernandez's NFL career, at least his Patriots career, might be over. They are the type of team that does, you know, everything they can to separate themselves from this kind of stuff. You know, the fact that his house was searched, there were reports that Hernandez was not cooperating with authorities, that they came away with materials that, you know, that he's still not considered, he's not been ruled out, he's still not considered necessarily a suspect, but possibly could be involved in the situation. Very, very scary stuff. And I can tell you that, you know, that there were questions about him, about Hernandez coming out of the draft. So this is, you know, perhaps not stunning to some people around the NFL that they feared that he was running around with the wrong crowd. So unfortunately, this is a situation that he's now had to deal with.
What is interesting, though, Arthur, is in his 3 years in New England to date, he's been very productive as a football player, had some injury problems. Hasn't been in any trouble that anybody can remember, certainly hasn't been disciplined by the league, and now to be involved in at least investigations in matters this serious, it almost seems to come out of nowhere, in spite of, you know, the fact that there may have been character concerns about the kid coming out of school.
Yeah, it's a bit stunning for sure. I mean, you mentioned it. There were teams that had their concerns about some off-the-field stuff, perhaps some failed drug tests while he was at Florida. But this is, of course, a completely different magnitude of a situation we're talking about here. And by all accounts, his teammates have said, you know, he has been a good soldier in the locker room and a good teammate. So this is something obviously we'll be following closely, and a really troubling story for, it's easy to forget, just a 23-year-old kid. He was a 20-year-old rookie coming into the league.
Well, and our thoughts at this point are on the victim in this situation. We certainly hope that Aaron Hernandez is not involved, but at the end of the day, there has been a murder, and this is very serious business. We don't want to focus on the football side of it, but we are in the football business, and you look at the New England Patriots who come to this problem, Eric, with serious concerns at tight end. We've been talking about Rob Gronkowski for the last 3 or 4 weeks. He did finally have surgery on his back late this week. We have heard that the rehabilitation should be 10 to 12 weeks. If it's 12 weeks, he could be not ready on opening day, miss a game or two. On the upside, he might be ready by opening day. He's certainly not going to be ready for training camp. So you've got the best tight end in football. You don't know what his status is for 2013. You do know that he isn't going to be the old Gronk, because even if he's ready to play the first week of the season, he hasn't had any off-season training to get ready. So you got to assume it's a year for him to get back to 100%. Now, if Hernandez is not available as well, it suddenly makes that Jake Ballard signing, which looked brilliant at the time, look doubly brilliant.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, Ballard, reports of him kind of limping around a little bit in mini camps, and he looked good previously. So, you know, I have a feeling that knee is also going to be one of these injury watch situations where we're kind of looking at it on a weekly weekly basis. But, yeah, he's going to be counted on it, and that's why the Patriots have about nine tight ends on their roster right now. Michael Oomanowunui is on the roster still. Daniel Fells, despite not being a big addition last year. So, you know, they're keeping the numbers there, and you got to throw Tebow's name out there. I don't think that's where he's going to play, but some people will make that connection. Going to be fascinating to watch what they end up doing at that position.
Yeah, I mean, I'll go there right now. I will tell you that if Gronk and Hernandez are both not available in training camp, they're going to move Tebow. They're going to convince him. They're going to say, yep, be a good team guy. That's what the Patriots always do. But that's not really the focus of this story today, Arthur, because now you've got to add the last piece. Regardless of whether Jake Ballard can make a 90 or 100% comeback or if Daniel Fells can be a factor, they're not going to be Rob Gronkowski and Aaron Hernandez. This offense is going to look very different. And Wes Welker and Brandon Lloyd, your two top wide receivers, are gone. So now you look at Danny Amendola, Michael Jenkins, Donald Jones. These are, you know, three of the key signings as veteran free agents. Can Tom Brady and those three replicate the New England passing game that has made them a Super Bowl contender and even favorite for the last five, 6 years?
Boy, it's going to be interesting. I mean, you talk about that lackluster group of receivers. The Patriots, of course, could get away with sort of the average guys on the outside because of the way that those tight ends in the middle of the field were able to just completely threaten defenses and really, you know, create the tempo, set what the New England offense really wants to do. So you mentioned even with, you know, Fells and Ballard, if he's healthy, they're not the same type of players. You can't expect the same type of production. It really makes you wonder, are we going to see Bill Belichick sort of changing direction again? It was just a few years ago that New England was ahead of the ball game with the two tight ends. Are they going to have something else up their sleeve? Are they going to have to with this situation?
We should add second round draft choice Aaron Dobson out of Marshall and fourth round pick Josh Boyce out of TCU, two promising young wide receivers. Pats haven't done so well drafting wide receivers in recent years. We will keep you up to date as this story develops, but there's no question right now the New England Patriots looking at a new offense for 2013. We've got a commercial break. We're back in a moment. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Hub Arkish, along with Eric Edholm and Arthur Arkish. And guys, Jacksonville has a lot going on right now. We talked, I believe it was 2 weeks ago, about Roger Goodell, the commissioner of the NFL's desire to see the Jacksonville Jaguars play two games a year in London. One would be a home game, one would be a road game. And we speculated as to what kind of message would that be for new owner Shad Khan to be sending to his fans. Arthur, Shad Khan has now responded late this week for the first time and tried to make it clear that he is not interested in playing any more than one game a year in London, that he would do that for the league, not because he wants to, you know, make any attempt to take anything away from the fans in Jacksonville. And yet the commissioner continues to want them to play too. Khan's attitude towards that is, we will cross that bridge when we come to it. But he has now come out and tried to quell any concerns of his fans and said, we really only want to be there once a year.
Yeah, and I think that that's got to be good news, of course, combined with the fact, and I know we'll get into a second, the major renovations the Jaguars have underwent at Everbank Field. That is another indication that hopefully they're not going to be going anywhere. But, you know, it's kind of interesting situation. Goodell kind of came out of nowhere and sort of pinning the Jaguars into a corner a little bit, and Shad Khan did kind of tiptoe lightly yesterday to make sure he didn't throw his commissioner under the bus per se. But as you mentioned, to reiterate that really the original plan of four games over 4 years, of course, is what they had in mind, and as of now, what the plan remains.
You know, the other piece of this, though, you look at this stadium, we've got to remember, this stadium was redone just a little over a decade ago. Yep. That's how they got a Super Bowl in the early 2000s, and now they're talking about another major renovation, right down to apparently swimming pools in the end zones.
Yeah.
That'd be a nice touch. I'd like to see
go
that.
Go for a dip,
know?
Sure.
But it's interesting to me, after the last renovation of what used to be, I believe, the Gator Bowl, they couldn't sell the place out, and they finally had to block out 12,000 seats in the upper deck just to qualify for sellouts to get the games aired locally. I would almost wonder if a new rehab of the stadium wouldn't be to make it a little smaller.
Yeah, I mean, well, I do know the fact that they're putting in these large scoreboards. They're trying to make the food options, you know, making more of a family environment there. You know, trying to improve, like you mentioned, the pool. I mean, obviously they're trying to make it almost like some of these baseball stadiums we see now, where they've got sort of the party deck things and more of a social atmosphere like that, and trying to improve the in-game experience. I wrote about this last year, and obviously the NFL is sort of trying to be one step ahead of the curve. They're at 96-97% capacity in a lot of stadiums, but places like Jacksonville are struggling. Other cities in the NFL are well below the curve. So, you know, obviously new ownership, they want to commit to this, you know, different approach than, say, Wayne Weaver took a decade ago, as you mentioned. And, you know, we'll see if Jacksonville responds, if they can be a legitimate NFL city that shows the support of the rest of the crew.
Arthur, one of your beats in recent years has been the AFC South, and of course Bruce Arians was both the NFL Coach of the Year and Assistant Coach of the Year in Indianapolis last year. He's now the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. In an interview with FoxSports.com this week, had some interesting comments. He said that he felt that coaches and players would be absolutely fine with an openly gay player in the locker room, but that he thought that an openly gay player in the NFL could face serious issues with the fans, that he'd be very concerned about the abuse that a player might take, particularly in visiting stadiums. And I'm impressed by Arians' willingness to speak on the subject, be quoted on the subject, and I think he's just being objective and reasonable and honest. He's probably right.
You know, there's a good chance he's right. I kind of would prefer to allow the fans to really set that decision and see what the reaction would be. Of course, we're, you know, a ways away from this point of even seeing what the reaction would be. But, you know, Bruce Arians is a football coach, incredible. I do think in Pittsburgh, though, you know, maybe he did rub some people the wrong way, just sort of his outspoken nature. I mean, even with Indianapolis last year, he will never shy away from saying what's on his mind. So do I think he may be right? Absolutely. I guess I wonder where his expertise comes from to be the one to say that.
Well, yeah, I don't think he's offering expertise so much as an opinion. And Eric, I guess right. I'm just a lot older and more cynical than Arthur, because I've been to Philadelphia, and I don't want to pick out Philadelphia, yeah. But I mean, I've been, you know, in Jet Stadium. I mean, I've been around some of these fans, and they would tell you that it would be meant in a sporting, harmless way, but you really can't go there on a subject like this and separate just sports and funds from what is wrong. Maybe I'm wrong, but I tend to agree with Arians on this one. I think it could be very tough. And by the way, it could be very tough in the NBA, Major League Baseball, and elsewhere. If Jason Collins finds a team to play with in the NBA, this coming season, I suspect he's going to hear things he doesn't want to hear. And that's why we admire so much the courage he showed in stepping out and being the first openly gay player in a major American team sport.
Yeah, you know, we heard the report earlier in the summer that a couple people had noted that maybe this group of homosexual players would come out together. It would kind of help diffuse things, separate things. Maybe they're on four different teams. Who knows, you know, but I think that might help. And, you know, the more it's out there, more people are talking about, probably the better result we have. I'd like to think people are mature enough to sort of separate those two things, but we'll have to see.
It is a story we will keep an eye on. Right now, we need to take another brief commercial break. We've got lots more news and notes from around the National Football League, and we're back with that in just a moment. We're back with Pro Football Weekly, and we'll now go NFC North on you. The Green Bay Packers surprised me, guys. One of the people that they really missed last year, particularly in their run defense, was their leading tackler, Desmond Bishop, who went down for the season in training camp, had been rehabbing all during the year, was slated to come back and supposedly close to 100%. And on Monday of last week, the Packers released him. Now, what caught me off guard by this is that that continues to be an area of need for the Packers as far as an inside linebacker who can stuff the run. And yet they've decided to move on. Bishop has already visited several teams. It appears he will not be on the street for long. He could, like teammate Greg Jennings, end up in Minnesota, where there's a tremendous need for an inside linebacker. That's one place he has reportedly either visited or scheduled to visit. But Eric, I'm curious, unless the Packers weren't happy with the physical, this really did come as a bit of a surprise.
Yeah, you first started hearing some rumblings back in March, you know, about possibly they could trade him, and I think that was probably internal talk that was fed to the media as a way of sort of softening the blow a little bit. So, you know, I think they felt like, physically speaking, he wasn't where he was at. You know, he signed the contract extension a couple years ago. You know, and they're talking about a guy who's coming off that torn hamstring and, you know, scheduled to make a lot of money. I think they just felt like there was no way they were going to be able to restructure to make him happy, and they just felt like they had to move on. And, you know, I guess from the Packers' perspective, that is one position that you can probably find on the waiver wire. A two-down inside linebacker. Maybe Brad Jones steps up. You know, I thought their outside backers were as bad in run support last year as the inside guys were. So, yeah, it's still a need. But it's still a need in Minnesota, where he's visited. You know, Kansas City, Jovan Belcher's death last year, haven't been able to replace him. That's something I think they would look at. Those two teams, I think, are going to kick the tires and possibly sign Bishop.
Well, the interesting thing here, Arthur, is that, you know, this is a team that had multiple draft picks, and yet the only linebacker they drafted was with their third pick in the seventh round, Sam Barrington, an inside backer out of South Florida. You look behind Desmond Bishop, who they had penciled in as a starter on the depth chart. Brad Jones used to start on the outside. They've now got him on the inside. They've got Robert Francois, a four-year player out of Boston College. That's about it.
Yeah, it does look surprisingly thin for sure. And, I mean, the only thing I can really think of here, and obviously, you know, the Packers get the benefit of the doubt with these personnel decisions. They clearly know what they're doing. But I just think Eric kind of mentioning maybe a little bit of the devaluing of that position. You feel like you can get guys to come in. They haven't become every-down players anymore. And then you mentioned Brad Jones. He's never really set the world on fire but does have some starting experience. Maybe they have some young guys they think are ready to, you know, step up. They definitely have a void now.
Eric, the New York Jets, they seem to live in the media spotlight in New York, but even if it wasn't a natural thing, they go out of their way to get there. And now their former Pro Bowl center, Nick Mangold, is speaking out. And was, you know, he was very blunt in an interview earlier this week where he said he believes the Jets, as a team and an organization, want Mark Sanchez to be their starting quarterback. Now, that would make sense considering they used the number 5 overall pick on the draft on him a number of years ago, whereas Geno Smith is a second round pick, and yet Geno Smith is a current second round pick. Mark Sanchez has had his issues over the years and has really struggled to take that position and own it, so you almost wonder where Mangold is coming from with this.
Well, here's my thought on the matter. You know, you heard reports about, well, maybe the Jets would use a package for Geno Smith as an option guy, as a run threat, you know, read option kind of thing. I think that was the first sign that, okay, look, he's got some physical abilities, but based on our initial findings here in the offseason minicamps, Geno Smith probably isn't ready from day one. And there's a reason why they didn't get rid of Sanchez in the offseason. They couldn't. They were financially hamstrung. They were, you know, lock and key to this guy. So I think at this point they almost feel like for us to kind of keep things stable and not crush this young guy's confidence, we've got to keep Mark Sanchez in there. And, you know, Mangold's a team leader. He talks to Rex Ryan quite a bit. You'd have to think that maybe he's somewhat of Rex's mouthpiece. Never thought Rex would have to have somebody else do the talking for him. But in this case, I think, you know, having that groupthink, that mentality of strength as a team, you know, might help Sanchez a little bit, might help the Jets. Then again, it could all go down the tank like it did last year.
Well, and Arthur, we received a tremendous amount of publicity over our pre-draft scouting report on Geno Smith as an NFL quarterback at Pro Football Weekly. And all it was a scouting report. We weren't looking for publicity with it, but some people were surprised because he got so overvalued by, quite frankly, some media members and draft analysts who didn't know what they were talking about. And this just continues to bear out what we reported, that this is a young man who does not have a grasp of an NFL offense. He played in a gimmick scheme at West Virginia. He may not be the best student of the game. We're not saying he can't learn and won't, but you certainly don't expect him to be a guy who's going to step right in and start in the vein of a Russell Wilson or an RG3 or an Andrew Luck.
Absolutely, and I kind of just had to chuckle when I did see this report because, of course, the Pro Football Weekly scouting report that we all stand behind and know, you know, the amount of research that went into it. And as much as everyone wanted to latch on to the, you know, maybe poor work ethic aspects that were really dissected in that scouting report, I think what you just said, an inability, or at least at this stage, an inability to grasp, you know, coverages and NFL defenses. He's just not there yet. And I kind of had to laugh. I totally agree with what Eric said, but doesn't it speak volumes about the Jets situation overall when you're talking about Mark Sanchez as sort of the sign of stability within the organization? I had to laugh when I heard that.
How many guys can say their claim to fame in the NFL is the butt fumble, you know? So it's a little tough to make him the face of the franchise, but at least for now, Mark Sanchez continues to be. We're going to take another quick commercial break here. News out of San Francisco, Minnesota as well. We'll have that for you in just a moment or two. Yes, we are. We're being brought to you this week by me. I'm Hub Arkish, along with Eric Edholm and Arthur Arkish. And guys, some significant signings in the Bay Area out in San Francisco, where the 49ers have extended the contracts of both offensive coordinator Greg Roman and all-pro defensive tackle slash end Justin Smith. Now, I think Smith probably, Eric, the more interesting signing at the moment, because what it does is create about $4 million in cap relief for the 49ers. Whenever people see a star-studded roster like the San Francisco 49ers that not only has all this talent, but has all their talent signed for another year or two, they wonder, well, how do they do this under the cap? And it's with moves like this where they're able to take one of their most valuable assets and create additional cap space.
Yeah, I think it's really important, especially if you want to sign Alden Smith to a contract of down the road. And, you know, Colin Kaepernick, I mean, they have one of the lowest priced quarterback positions in the NFL after trading Alex Smith. I mean, they have less money invested in that than almost any team in the NFL off the top of my head. So, you know, at some point they're going to have to take care of that. This is a great benefit for that. Maybe that gets done before August. Who knows? But I think, you know, Smith has kind of hinted that he may only have a year or two left. So it wouldn't stun anybody if he plays one more year and says, that's it, I'm done. And then sort of waits for his Hall of Fame mention if he gets one. So It's kind of curious to see what happens. Obviously, he's a fixture. That defense took a nosedive after he left the lineup late in the season. So, you know, it's a big player, but more like you said, I think the flexibility on the cap is the most important thing.
You know, Arthur, the other thing that they have in San Francisco that nobody talks enough about is one of the best general managers in football. Trent Baalke is not a household name in the way that Ozzie Newsome is, that Bill Polian was. And you look at the job he's done building this roster. And now even this year in the draft, they trade up to get Eric Reed, who is a second one starter in the NFL at safety after letting Deshaun Goldson get away in free agency so they wouldn't overpay and abuse their cap. But it's other moves like Marcus Lattimore in the fourth round. They had multiple fourth round picks, multiple seventh round picks, multiple second round picks. What a great spot to take a chance on a guy who prior to the leg injuries at South Carolina was looking like an NFL All-Pro. And then I'm also really intrigued by the tight end out of Rice, Vance McDonald. Now, I didn't love him coming out of school, but they could have had Tyler Eifert. They traded up to 18 in the first round. They could have had Zach Ertz with their own pick in the second round, and yet they chose to let those players go off the board and bring in McDonald, and then they got Tank Carradine, the defensive end out of Florida State, as they start to build for the future beyond Justin Smith. So I just don't think that Baalke gets anywhere near enough credit for the job he does out there.
Couldn't agree with you more. I think another draft like this, perhaps another, obviously the kind of success in going to the Super Bowl and all the wins piling up, the head coach signing, I mean, I think the success will be coming Trent Baalke's way, but I think the last thing you said was the most interesting to me because you talk about building for the future in the draft. Yes, they trade up to get Eric Reed. That fills a starting spot. This was the most talented roster in the league going into the draft. They knew they didn't have a lot of holes to fill, but to get guys like Lattimore, Tank Carradine coming off the knee injury, Corey Lemonnier, guys to be jars on the shelf who you think can be impact players down the road when you don't need them for anything right now, that's smart. That's why Trent Baalke's the best in the business.
And, guys, I would keep an eye on A.J. Jenkins this year. I got a funny feeling. I mean, this kid showed some flashes at Illinois. He just wasn't consistent. So they bring him in. They give him a redshirt year. And I will bet you anything that he has some big moments for them. And, Eric, we can't, not talk about the extension of Greg Roman. My guess would be that there could be some major college programs sniffing around him, that they figure he could be in demand for other NFL jobs. Why not keep him happy and make him feel good about where he is?
Well, I mean, I don't think he can split the atom or anything, but he's a football genius. You know, I mean, I really like what Greg Roman, brings to the table. Sat down with him a couple of days at media access at the Super Bowl, found it to be, completely engaging. I thought a guy who could, explain complex concepts very easily to media types. So certainly got players who are a little behind the curve in that, I think could really help in that regard. So, they've taken some parts that I think are, that didn't grade out to superior ones coming out of college and made them very, very good players, very serviceable up front. So I'm excited to see what they do. They've moved Vernon Davis out to wide out a little bit in this offseason. So it's going to be fun to see how they compensate for the Crabtree loss. And I think Greg Roman's going to be a big part of that.
All right, Eric, I know you were covering the Vikings very closely late last season. Everybody knows that as remarkable as their 2012 run was, there's still a huge question at quarterback with Christian Ponder. You have to be intrigued by their bringing in Matt Cassel to back him up. And now come reports out of minicamp and OTAs that Ponder appears to continue to be struggling.
Yeah, he's had his ups and downs. He's made some throws. It's not an arm strength question. I think it's a confidence question, a touch issue. He was accurate at Florida State because they ran a lot of short routes. They had some pretty talented wide receivers. They got the ball out of his hands quickly. But, we're talking about an offseason in which they lost Percy Harvin. That's going to be significant. How quickly does Cordarrelle Patterson step into the lineup? Greg Jennings, he's coming off one of his worst seasons. We assume he's good, but, how much can he help? So a lot of issues for that. The pressure of Cassel being there is a huge, huge season for Christian Ponder.
All right, guys, we're going to take another commercial break here, but we want to start a new series on our weekly show. We want to look at free agency and try and figure out for you who figure to be the biggest impact free agents this year. We'll start with the defense first. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Hub Arkish, along with Eric Edholm and Arthur Arkish. We will talk now about free agency and the impact it's going to have on the NFL this year. We're starting on the defensive side. You all know by now some of the big signings, some of the surprising signings, a couple guys who decided to stay put and possibly made their team stronger by doing that. But, guys, we're looking here for the ones who will make the biggest impact. And let's start on the defensive line. First, Erica, you look at both Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett going to Seattle. I'm fascinated by Elvis Dumervil going to the Ravens, even though he'll probably be an outside backer in their 3-4. And then you talk about Danelle Ellerby in Miami and Paul Kruger in Cleveland. Those were probably the biggest name signings.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And yet I have a feeling that some of these guys are going to be pretty big disappointments. You know, Averill always flashed in Detroit, but I never felt like he was a great three-down player. I know he has that 12, 13 sack potential. You know, Bennett, the health is certainly a concern. One of my big guys that I really like is Michael Johnson. Now, he returned to the Bengals, but the way they handled their entire offseason, franchising Johnson, keeping him in the fold, still able to keep their other key free agents like Andre Smith and stuff. So, you know, I thought they handled it pretty well, and I bet you Johnson outperformed some of these guys, just like Desmond Bryant may outperform Paul Kruger his first year. So, some of the top guys may not live up to their billing this year, is my gut feeling.
You know, Arthur, two of the best-kept secrets in the league last year were Michael Bennett in Tampa, who had a huge impact down there, and he's now in Seattle, and then Jason Jones, who I thought keyed the entire Seattle Seahawks run defense, and he's now in Detroit.
Yeah, you know, with Michael Bennett going from Tampa to Seattle, that's a big move, obviously, with the, you know, the injury concerns of Chris Clemens going down in the postseason and Red Bryan, who was outstanding last year. But they could use a little bit more help, get a little more stout up front, and Bennett's a guy they think can certainly help them there. Jason Jones, a guy who's been incredibly versatile throughout his career, I believe that he's most valuable from the inside, but he gives the ability to kick outside and do, you know, a bunch of different things. So I think that could be a nice addition as well.
Eric, the Chicago Bears use a franchise tag on Henry Melton. I think they did that as much to avoid giving him long-term money as to say, hey, he's you know, a Pro Bowl three technique tackle. Now, he did go to the Pro Bowl in the NFC last year, but he's really a guy who can be a factor in the pass rush and can also be a liability against the run and just doesn't seem to be a $10 million a year defensive tackle. Also curious what you think Dwight Freeney is going to have left in San Diego.
Yeah, first on Melton, I mean, you know, he's an engaging personality. You know, he obviously, you know, he's somebody that I think a lot of teams will be very attracted to if he does reach the open market next year. And I think the Bears are just kind of letting this play out, like you said, and they're probably not going to throw a an eight-figure salary at him anytime soon. So it's going to be curious to see what ends up happening there. I bet you he plays really, really well, or at least puts up big sack numbers this year. Whether he's the factor against the run, it remains to be seen. And then, you know, you mentioned Freeney. I think it's a fascinating signing. I didn't necessarily expect him to go to another 3-4 team, but maybe the health was more of an issue than switching defenses, so that could be the factor out there.
And as we look at these defensive linemen and linebackers, Arthur, so much of this uncertainty revolves around the teams that are either going from a 4-3 to a 3-4 or from a 3-4 to a 4-3. In the case of the Dallas Cowboys and Anthony Spencer, after DeMarcus Ware, he was their second most valuable player last year when healthy, but he's now going to be asked to put a hand on the ground in Monty Kiffin's 4-3 defense, and he has not done that before in the NFL.
And you kind of read my mind, just getting back to Henry Melton for a second, you wonder if maybe the reason the Bears didn't want to lock him up, I don't know if they had the money or not, but does he have the scheme versatility? I'm not suggesting the Bears are going to an odd front anytime soon, but you have to be some of these guys can thrive in one scheme, and we'll see what happens in another. With Anthony Spencer, I expect he's going to be just fine, but we'll have to see. A couple other names we didn't mention, Ricky Jean-Francois and Abreu Franklin with the Colts. This is a team that really wanted to get to be two gappers. They couldn't do it last year. These are the kind of prototypical players. Maybe that defense gets a little bit of a spike from them.
Another late signing, Eric, that I think is worth keeping an eye on. Remember, there was that slew of perennial Pro Bowlers, some even Hall of Fame potential guys like Freeney, like John Abraham, like Carlos Dansby, who sat out there for a while. Now, Carlos Dansby goes back to Arizona. It's a team that was playing pretty good defense late last year. If Darrell Washington can stay out of trouble and they pair these two together inside, they could be pretty effective.
Great pair. I love Darrell Washington as a player. An unbelievable blitzer. Can move around in space. You know, some people thought he was undersized. You know, Dansby, disappointing couple years, obviously signed for big money in Miami, didn't perform up to that level. There were flashes where he did look like a really good player. So, you know, can he return to form and do so without Ray Horton? I mean, Ray Horton was kind of the defensive wizard out there. He goes to Cleveland. They've got a new staff out there as well. So some scheme changes as well. You know, it's a question mark. I like the Cardinals, but I still have questions about that defense.
All right, guys, so let's have a little bit of fun here. Let's get out on a limb of all these defensive linemen and linebackers. We'll do the same thing next segment with the DBs. Who do you think is going to be the guy who has the biggest impact? I'll go first. I like the Paul Kruger signing in Cleveland. I think they overpaid for him. I think they paid him too much money. But everything I've heard out of Baltimore is this was a kid whose arrow was pointing straight up, and I expect him to make an impact with the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, I liked Kruger as a 30-40 play guy. I don't know if he can be out there for 60-65 plays and have that same level of effectiveness. It's not sexy, but I'll go with Michael Johnson, the guy I mentioned. I think he's going to be a terror off the edge for the Bengals, and I really think the Desmond Bryant signing might end up being bigger than Kruger in Cleveland. He was such a force out there with not a lot around him.
This is a little bit a shot out of the dark a little bit. I'm going to go with Osei Enyiora going to Atlanta, replacing John Abraham, a guy who seems to be motivated. you know, he's a heck of an athlete. He's put up some big numbers. They need some pass rush production. We'll see if he can give it to him.
You know, Arthur, good for you, because I would have been bummed if we finished the segment and then right. realized we left OC out, because that is a very big signing. Good call. We've got to take a commercial break here. We'll do the same with the DBs, cornerbacks, and safeties. Free agents on the move. We're doing it in just a moment. We continue our discussion of who are likely to be the biggest impact free agents in the NFL this year. That'd be guys playing with a new team for the first time, or guys who had a crack at free agency and decided to stay home during this 2013 offseason leading up to kickoff in September of 2013. We've talked about defensive linemen and linebackers. Let's talk about cornerbacks and safeties now. And guys, there is a very distinguished list at both positions, but to not Arthur, start with Ed Reed, who is in Houston. Now, I know you've covered the Texans the last few years, and a lot of people are expecting Ed Reed to be the difference between an underachieving team and a Super Bowl contender.
You know, I think that he has a chance to be that difference. I think if you look at what happened with that defense down the stretch, they just really could not hang with these high-powered passing offenses. They believe that Ed Reed brings the swagger, the playmaking ability to help cure that problem. I just obviously worry about his health, as so many others are right now. But if he's on the field, I do expect him to be a huge, huge upgrade there.
Yeah, Eric, don't you love when a guy gets a four-year, $12 million contract in free agency, expect to be the answer to all their problems, then goes out and has hip surgery?
I mean, hey, you know, it's really a concern. My gut feeling was initially that Baltimore just said, you know what, there's so many things, the shoulder impingement, the back problems, the knee problems, all these other things, and then there's the hip on top of it that he kind of hit at supposedly last year a little bit. So you'd have to think Baltimore knew, you know, we love Ed Reed, we'd love to have him back, but not with all these injury concerns.
And does that make the more intriguing signing Deshaun Goldson, who leaves one of the best secondaries in the NFL in San Francisco? And, you know, Eric, he's now in Tampa. He got some serious money, but he's a younger player who probably has his best football in front of him.
Yeah, with Mark Barron at the other safety position, you know, they upgraded with Darrell Revis at corner. I mean, I just can't wait to see what the difference is in the secondary. Statistically speaking, they were probably the worst secondary in football last year, and if the Carolina Panthers will steal that from them this year. But yeah, I mean, I really can't wait to see what that defense does. Back four looks so strong right now. Safety pair could be terrific. Revis, if he's back to form, wow, that's going to be fun.
Guys, I'll tell you right now, my favorite signing at safety is Adrian Wilson in New England. This has got Rodney Harrison written all over it for me. This is a guy who was a big-time player in Arizona, was there 11 years. He's older but not ancient, and a perfect fit for the kind of move that Bill Belichick likes to make. And this kid could really solidify what otherwise is a young and up-and-coming defense. Arthur, one of the teams on your beat, the Tennessee Titans, has a pair of new safeties. Could be interesting. I wish one of them would shut his mouth, but other than that, they're very, very interesting.
Yeah, I'm with you. I can't imagine what the advantage of Bernard Pollard saying he wants to kill everything in sight when he's on Greg Williams' staff. I don't understand that. I think it was silly. But as a football player, you put him in the right position. You can keep him close to the line of scrimmage. I think he is really going to stabilize that defense. Michael Griffin, incredibly talented free safety, but just kind of an enigma. Never seems to be, you know, doing his best unless everything's great around him. So I expect Pollard, and let's not forget George Wilson. I believe they're going to work into some dime packages and three safety looks, and I think the secondary should be much improved.
Eric, some really good cornerbacks on the move, and a couple stayed home. But what's interesting about all these cornerbacks, either coming off injury, maybe a year or two over the hill, or maybe just coming off a down season for some reason, the one guy whose arrow appears to be pointing up is Sean Smith of the Miami Dolphins. He goes to Kansas City along with Dante Robinson, who was released by the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, another team that has improved significantly in the secondary. We'll see if Eric Berry can have a sort of a bounce back season. Same with Kendrick Lewis, the safety. So another team that could be leaps and bounds better in the back four there. I'll throw another name of an ascending guy out there, Greg Toler. I mean, he was one of the few Colts signings this offseason that I was very much behind. I think he could be an impact guy. Derek Cox in the past has played very well. But some of these other signings, Kerry Williams hasn't shown up to OTAs at times. Rogers Cromartie coming off a poor season. You know, Nnamdi Asamoah coming off an awful season, now going to the 49ers. I'm not sure if these guys are going to be able to revive their careers or, in Williams' case, take that next step.
You know, it's funny. You mentioned Nnamdi going to the 49ers, and I'd almost forgotten on my list Charles Woodson is going to play out his career in Oakland. And, you know, Arthur, I don't really understand that one. Obviously, Charles Woodson wasn't ready to retire, but it's not like he's going to be the missing link and suddenly the Raiders are a playoff contender. You're 37 years old. You're going to the Hall of Fame. Why play one more year on one of the worst defenses in the NFL?
Yeah, I'm with you. We know what kind of a leader, we know what type of an influence he can be on a defense. The Raiders probably have the worst roster in the NFL. I'm not trying to pretend they're going to do anything this season, but some guys just aren't ready to give it up, and if he wants to keep playing, I don't really think this was as much about the money as the fact that guy just wants to continue to have that camaraderie and be on the field on Sundays, and who are we to fault him for that?
I'll tell you, a signing I liked by both the player and the team was Aqib Talib, taking a one-year deal to stay in New England. The kid's got Pro Bowl potential. His problem's really been staying healthy, not staying out of trouble the last year or two. He was a factor when he was healthy with the New England Patriots. I think because of the injuries, he wasn't going to get the long-term deal. If he can stay healthy this year and have the Pro Bowl season he's capable of, he could be a big money maker next year.
Yeah, they traded for him, and they signed him to a one-year, I believe, $5 million deal. And you just watched that Baltimore game. You know, early in the game, he was on some passes, made a pass break up there, pulls up Lane with the hamstring. He leaves the lineup. Nobody out there can tackle. Nobody can cover. The Baltimore Ravens go right after his replacement, Kyle Arrington, and that was a big reason for the loss, I think.
All right, guys, very quickly, I've already got my guy out there. I think Adrian Wilson makes the biggest impact of anybody in this group. Who do you think?
I got Goltz, and just because I think he's going to tie that whole Buccaneers secondary together.
I like Brent Grimes. It's risky, but a one-year deal. Talking about guys who have a chance to cash in. This is one of the best corners in the NFL before getting injured last year. I think he bounces back and has a big impact.
All right, guys, we've got one more commercial break to take care of, and then the Publisher's Pen will be up after that.
And now with the Publisher's Pen, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
You know, guys, I this has been a recurring theme with me over the last couple of years. I acknowledge that, but I think it's going to continue to be, and it is important and relevant over the next 7 years, the remaining time of the current collective bargaining agreement between the owners and the players. And the reason it's relevant is because we continue to see evidence of how badly the players got crushed in the lockout and the new agreement that they signed. Now, we're not going to hold any tag days for these guys. They're making a lot of money. The median salary is up around $800,000 a year. The average salary is above that. But at the end of the day, they continue to be the most profitable sport in the world and yet the least paid players amongst the four major team sports in the USA. And what brings us to mind is a subject we talked about in the show, the Packers' release of Desmond Bishop. Now, why would they do it? He comes back. Apparently, he's healthy, but maybe not the same Desmond Bishop that he was last year prior to the injury. But he's going to cost you a couple million bucks against the cap. Now, if you put him on the street and you can get a journeyman player to step in and be as productive at that spot, you just saved maybe $1 million. Maybe it's $500,000-$600,000 against the cap. The cap has not gone up for these players in now the 3 years of the agreement. They were supposed to make so much more money. The owners truly own the game right now, and players continue to suffer for the agreement they made because of the way the owners were able to take back money. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. Our thanks, as always, to our outstanding engineer and producer, Randy Meyer, to our home studio and syndicator, Syndication Networks. And most of all, thanks to all of you for listening. We do appreciate it. Join us again next week, same time, same station, for Pro Football Weekly.